The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's our first full week. Our first full week.
That means we survived it.
We did.
Yeah. Did you think we wouldn't?
No. Well, yes. Yes. I thought we would survive it.
Okay.
I realized that answer was right there in the middle. This has been a lot of fun, but we get a round table today.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think that in learning about how to do podcasts is making sure that the voices you're hear just aren't you and me. I think that's the magic of it. And finding guys that understand the game, know the game, have great takes on the game is kind of fun.
You and I had a conversation off air about the broadcasting world that I'm going to visit next week.
Okay.
All right. We don't have time today, but I do want to go down the path because people...
I can't remember what the conversation was. You'll have to remind me. So
one thing that I've realized from the comments, and keep those coming in to everybody that's tuned in, that's subscribed. We love your reactions of what you're digging and maybe what you'd like to hear more of. But your stories from the broadcast and your opinions on the sports broadcasting, the hockey broadcast side have really grabbed hold. So I want to pull on a thread.
Really? My wife says she doesn't care about any of this stuff.
No, that's the worst place to go. If you're looking for solid feedback on which direction to travel is inside the house. But we've got Eric DeHatchuk and Scott Burnside standing by as we continue on 100% Hockey. This is our first official hockey roundtable on 100% Hockey. Scott Burnside from the Slopes in Syracuse, New York. And Eric, where are you, Eric DeHatchuk?
I am in Calgary.
Hold on. You screwed up the intro already. These guys, their names and their plaques are in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I was excited
about skiing.
These guys are
Elmer Ferguson Award winners, both of them. You and I... We can get into the Hall of Fame, but it costs us $850.
I just say I know Eric DeHatchuk. That's what I do. that's pretty simple for me. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing great. I thought your introduction was fine, Darren. Don't let John bully you this early in your relationship here in the pod world.
It's only been 15 years.
and I'm still not used to the bullying. Hey, we've got some great surprises. We've got some stumbles. We've got some brilliance. We've got overcoming challenges. But the story for me this year has been the fact that there's not really a story. Like it's flat. There's not a dominant team. There's not a terrible team in the National Hockey League. Where are we?
I'm sorry. Are you not following Alex Ovechkin's pursuit of the once unassailable all-time goals record? Not only he breaks his leg, comes back, he's still on pace to equal and surpass Wayne Gretzky, I don't know, end of March, maybe first week of April. And as we speak now, I called this up, I believe the Caps have the tops point percentage in the NHL. And if they aren't tops, let's just look here. Let's be accurate here. Number two in the NHL in points percentage. And would you not have picked the Caps to be what a playoff bubble team at best? Mm-hmm. I think the Caps are the story of the NHL's half season. And Ovechkin's pursuit of Gretzky, in spite of breaking his leg, a year ago, it looked like maybe he'll retire and he'll never catch him. And now he's going to catch him before the end of the regular season. So I now maybe it's a Western thing. Is it Western bias? They always talk
Oh,
about Eastern bias.
yeah. We've never heard of Western bias before.
No,
Are you kidding me?
no.
I'm sorry. You know, it's about time the Eastern Conference gets a break with some
Yes,
attention.
yes. Shine a light.
Eric, where do you see things?
Well, I just think that the whole league is upside down compared to what the conventional wisdom was. So to reinforce Scott's point, where are the New York Rangers? Where are the New York Rangers? If you canvassed everybody's take at the start of the season when everybody had to make those crazy predictions, you would have put the Rangers at the top of the Metropolitan and Washington somewhere on the cusp of playoff contention, but likely outside. So Rangers have been a little bit better lately, but they were a complete disaster for a month there, and it looked as if they were going to possibly finish at the bottom of a division that they were supposed to win. And then you can flip over to the Central and you see Nashville. I always think about something that Bradtree Living told me a couple of years ago. Do you remember the year that they made the trade for Tkachuk and they brought in Huberdeau and Uyghur, and Ottawa made some aggressive moves, and Calgary and Ottawa were said to win the summer, right? I remember at the start of training camp, Tree Living said, "It's all well and good to win the summer, but as a manager, I prefer to win the fall, winter, and spring." And I thought, exactly. So who won the summer last year? Well, Nashville won the summer, clearly, because they got Marchessault, they got Stamkos, they got Brady Shea, they had that great finish. And where's Nashville, right? So to me, it's an upside down NHL. And maybe that's your point, Darren, that that a lot of times we want our biases confirmed, and the first half of the NHL season is just like, what happened?
I don't
I love
disagree
Erik
with
Hatchek.
I don't disagree with you, Scott, but what really is the bigger story, the team or the player?
Well, but I see, to me, the story is that it's not just Alex Ovechkin. And listen, I and maybe he's too far away to really get a sense of that he what he's going to accomplish is mind-boggling, right? I covered his I was yeah, this is how long ago I was still working for ESPN, and I traveled for a week or so as Ovechkin was getting to the 500 goals 9 years ago last week. And it was first Russian to get to 500 goals. He's always been very generous with his time with me, and I've always enjoyed time spent with him. I went bowling with him one night. It's a crazy thing. So, but anyway,
I can tell you who won.
well, I never he bowls like Fred Flintstone, but left-handed. But the point was, I don't remember at that point 500 goals. I don't remember people were saying, well, next up Wayne Gretzky. Because of the way he played, and because it was just so, it was he had to go basically another 500 goals, and the fact that he has continued, last year's bit of a slip, and the team's, listen, that management team deserves all kinds of credit because they have absolutely retooled on the fly. They got waxed in the first round in the playoffs, didn't deserve to get in there. The Rangers embarrassed them. I was with Eric. I thought they were a bubble team at best. And maybe much worse, but Spencer Carberry has done an unbelievable job. They have unbelievable production. And Ovechkin, it's not always about Ovechkin. He's out for whatever, 4 or 5 weeks with a broken leg. And they continue to be the best team in the Eastern Conference, which defies odds. So I think it's a tremendous story. I don't know if they can keep it up. Could they? And again, go back to Eric's point. I think the New York Rangers are going to get back in it. The East is full of really mushy teams. How about Washington Rangers in the first round? If the Rangers are a wild card team, would anyone pick against the Rangers in that series? Probably not many outside of Washington. So anyway, I think the Caps and Ovechkin are a tremendous story. And as we get closer, I'm curious to see, the buzz rising up to this because it really is a mark that I don't think anyone thought would be approached, let alone bettered. And I don't know if there's anyone, Connor McDavid, whoever it's going to be, is anyone ever going to get to this point again? Ever's a long time, but we may never see this again.
A year ago at this time, Eric, I would have said, yes, we're going to follow Ovechkin, but Auston Matthews is the next one. Auston Matthews is going to surpass both Gretzky and Ovechkin. And
Gotta stay
now you're,
healthy. I don't know.
and now you've got to wonder, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, because it's two things. It's the consistency and the longevity, right? So I think in the case of Ovechkin, the fact that, he's playing like he looks like an old man. You look at him and you look at his face and you look at that beard, and then you compare that to the pictures of him coming into the league, and he looks like an old man, but he's not playing like an old man. But the problem, and we've seen this time and time again, is that, players play at a high level unexpectedly for a long period of time, and then it drops off a cliff, and it happens very suddenly. Now, I don't think it's going to happen in the time that it takes him to break the record, but I guess the point is that, like Matthews has to do it this year, and then next year, and then the year after that, and then 5 years from now, and then another 5 years, and he has to be healthy, and he has to stay motivated too. There are a lot of great players in the game that can't tear themselves away and have to be told to go away. And then there are others that realize their time has come, and then they do go away. So I think that will be the larger issue going forward in hockey. I wonder how many players are going to want to play 20 years, especially the great players. They'll have made their money. Presumably they'll have won their championships. So, it has to be that high level of performance plus longevity. I just don't think that we're going to see too many players of the current generation and the players coming playing for 2 decades. I can't see it. I think they're going to want to move on to other things in their lives at a much earlier point. And for that reason, it might be a record that never gets broken. But like you, John, for most of my writing life, every time I referenced Wayne Gretzky, there would always be some, part of the sentence that said records that will never be broken. And
Sure.
I honestly thought that almost for right up until the start of last year. And then only was willing to consider the possibility of it, and now it looks inevitable.
I always thought of Ovi as a great goal scorer, but he'd never really be able to compete with the aura or the legend of Sidney Crosby. And once he breaks this record, they're basically on equal footing when you're the all-time goal scoring record.
Oh, well, and by the way, we should pay heed to Sidney, who last night with a goal and two assists passed Joe Sakic and is now ninth overall in scoring in the history of the National Hockey League. He's not that far behind a few of some of the guys that we might put on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I don't know how you're gonna at the end of it comparing Ovechkin and Crosby, different types of players, even though they're forever linked from when they came in the league after the lockout, and really, a credit, Crosby's unassailable on all every front. He just is. But I think Ovechkin, there've been, it took him a long time to and he and the Caps to get it right. There were questions about his leadership. There were questions about his commitment. I remember a couple of times when the Caps were getting dusted early in the playoffs, and he would fly off immediately to play in the World Championships. And sometimes people don't understand how important it is for European players, Russian players, to go and play in the World Championships when Russia was allowed to play. So and then he got it, and I've never I think he's going to be on, the Mount Rushmore, whatever, however many players are on it. He and Crosby both deserve to be on there. And when he passes Gretzky, as he's going to, he's got a Stanley Cup win to his credit. I don't know what there would be to question about it. And let me throw this out there. I do know that a lot of people find his connection to Putin, that sours them on, falling in on this, the hoopla leading up to passing Gretzky's all-time record. I just think it's, not knowing what goes on in the heart of hearts of people, and not knowing what the ramifications are for people who do speak out against Putin in whatever form in Russia. To me, I can't go there, because I don't have the wherewithal to say for sure. Well, we shouldn't celebrate him because he feels this certain way. But I do know that that's a factor for some people, A, in the media, and
Yeah.
maybe
This is
other players.
2024 though, Scotty. We find flaws in everybody.
Yeah,
We find
well,
flaws.
yeah.
I mean, believe it or not, the four of us are a little flawed too.
But you already pointed out my flaws.
What? Yeah, we need four bat. More shows.
And, and aren't we in 2025?
Oh, that's, you know what? Something. There you go.
That's it.
Okay, don't worry. We can fix that in post.
Well, to pick up on Scotty's point, though, and just talk about the hockey side of the equation, like Ovechkin checks some of the boxes of a great player, and Crosby checks all of the boxes. Like there isn't a single thing that Sidney Crosby can't do. And all of the things that he had trouble doing when he came into the NHL, he made a point of fixing. I remember that conversation about faceoffs. Specifically, he was on a tour of Western Canada, and all of a sudden he had gone from being someone who couldn't win a faceoff to someone who was winning a lot of faceoffs. And in those days when Sid came through, there would be a press conference because there was such a demand for his time. Mm-hmm. And I remember I asked him the question about faceoffs, and he gave a very detailed answer about how he worked on it because he felt that he was letting his team down at different times, and he wanted to be someone that was known that as a player that could play in those situations. So every time there was some small perceived flaw in this very good all around game, he went out and made sure that flaw disappeared. So then you look at him today; he's the all time faceoff wins leader. You know, to remake a part of your game that is weak and turn it into something that's a strength, that's completely admirable. It's like, you know, players are coming to the league with a reputation as not being able to keep up because their skating isn't as good enough, and they work with power skating coaches, and they go that extra mile in the summer when they could be sipping margaritas and taking time off to eliminate that flaw in their games. And so, like, I just consider Crosby one of the most admirable athletes that I've ever covered. And I've, you know, we've covered, you know, right from the 70s up until now. And I can't think of anyone who does more and can do more, even at an advanced age, than Sidney Crosby. So to me, there's no question. When it comes to a pecking order between these two, Sidney Crosby will always, in my mind, be ahead of Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah.
My point was that Ovechkin and this assault on the record is just closing the gap. Sidney hasn't fallen off at all, but Ovi's just done his part to mm-hmm. be able to put himself in that conversation.
Yeah.
Well, and when you consider the ebbs and flows that, you know, here was Sid with three Stanley Cups before Alexander had none. And now it appears that the Capitals are in much better shape, even in the long term, than the Penguins are. It's a fascinating analysis of how both of these guys have contributed to the franchise. One quick story. So I was in Pittsburgh, before Christmas, in 2024, first week of December, for the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame gala, which was a spectacular night. And to put what Crosby does in context, USA Hockey wanted to give him an award. They have a standing award that they can present to people for their contributions other than the Lester Patrick, which was won by Sam Rosen that night. And Sid said no. Sid said, I do not want this award because the focus should be on the people going into the hall and Sam. So, you know, please, I don't want to be the focus of what the event is all about. And that to me is just that's Sid. Mm-hmm. That's what Sid does. And it truly is amazing. Do you think though, and I'm going to throw Connor McDavid's name in this too. Do you think though, what Crosby has done, what Ovechkin's done and McDavid's done is put an unfair pressure on guys like Macklin Celebrini and Connor Bedard?
Don't you think though? I mean, the pressure is inevitable for those players. And when you say what Connor McDavid has done, I assume you're talking about it on an individual basis because, and I'm sure he, you know, he and Crosby and Nate McKinnon and all, you know, all of them go back down through the list, Taze and Patrick Kane. Yes, sure. They love the, you know, to win an award. You're the best scorer, MVP, Hart, Ted Lindsay, all those things. But at the end of the day, if you're not, if you haven't got your name on the Stanley Cup, then fair or not, I think it's fair to say, you know, well, your accomplishments are different than the three times Sidney Crosby's on that cup and the one time Alex Ovechkin's on that cup. And I'm, when you watch the video of what happens when the Oilers lose game seven to the Florida Panthers, you understand that that really is all that matters. That's it. And so, I mean, with all due respect to Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Celebrini and whoever else is Bedard, got to bring home the prize, or sorry, you're just another good player. I'm sorry. That's just maybe I'm old school stuff, but to me, that's just how it is.
I don't see
Eric?
it as being pressure, Eric.
No, I don't see it as pressure at all, actually, because the one thing that I've detected or felt with younger players coming up that they truly believe it when they say, "I'm not trying to be the next Wayne Gretzky. I'm not trying to be the next Sidney Crosby. I'm not trying to be the next Connor McDavid. I'm trying to be the best Macklin Celebrini that I can be, the best Connor Bedard that I can be." And I have a difficulty in a 32 team National Hockey League putting that sort of pressure on a young player that the only way to make your career meaningful is to win a championship. We can talk about expansion all you want, and it's been great getting Vegas into the league. It's been great getting Seattle into the league. But I've said this over and over again, that if you just look at the mathematics, you win three championships per city per century. So if you're a fan of the San Jose Sharks, you've got none so far, so you're due. But so much of what will happen in terms of making it a viable option for Celebrini is what Mike Greer does in terms of building the personnel around him, because hockey will always be the ultimate team game. And even the great forwards are only going to play a little over 20 to 25 minutes a night. Not many can play that. And the rest of the time you're on the bench and you have to rely on your teammates. You have to make sure that your goaltending is right for 2 months every spring, because if it isn't, you're not going to win. And so there are so many X factors that are involved in winning a championship, luck, injuries, that great players are especially now in a 32 team league, are going to play a long time and have successful careers and fail to win a championship. And it's a question of mathematics and things that are beyond your control. So now, focusing back on the individuals, what their agents, advisors, friends, trainers are telling them: control the things you can control, be the best version of yourself you can be, and then just see. And like sitting here today, San Jose, they look on their way. I mean, as somebody that watches more games in the Pacific time zone than in the Eastern time zone, I like what I see, even though they're not winning consistently enough. Askarov has come in and looks like he's going to be the player that will live up to his draft pedigree. Will Smith started slowly. He's had an up and down first season, but boy, you can see the flashes there. Eklund is quietly becoming a really good player. If they hang on to Granlund, he's been terrific this year. Zetterlund, I like the pieces there. So much of it is going to depend on the building blocks that are established around them. So, they just have to rely on themselves to do what they can do, and then on management to put the right pieces around them.
If you are a team that's rebuilding or just trying to reload on the fly, what's the most important influence?
Can you ask that again, Darren? You froze up a little bit. What's the most important influence? Like, is it?
What is it, manager? Is it coach, or is it player?
Well, I don't. I'll take the wishy-washy answer. I don't think you can do any of it without all three components. And I think when you look at the championship teams, I mean, when I go, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I know, Steve Yzerman's influence is very strong there, but Julien Brisebois, John Cooper, Victor Hedman, Nikita Kucherov. I mean, if you take one of those elements away, are they the team that wins back to back and goes to a third straight final? I would argue the same about the Florida Panthers and Bill Zito and the work that he has done there, a man who like, man, he's turned it on its, you know, building a team on its ear, right? Could care less about draft, you know. I think they had two players that were Florida draft picks in most of the playoffs last year. Doesn't care, and it didn't matter. So I, you know, I'll say wishy-washy answer, but you have to have all three, and maybe so maybe the answer is this. You have to have the absolute best ownership that you can possibly have. So you have to have an ownership that will spend to the cap. You have to have an ownership that will spend on scouting and coaching and development and put in place the ability for all those components to come together. And you know what? You look around the NHL's never been in a better spot in terms of ownership, in terms of, you know, not wondering, is this team going to go bankrupt? Are they going to have to, you know, pull up stakes in the middle of the night? We don't talk about that anymore now that Arizona's gone. But there are owners like GMs and coaches and players who are better than others. And if you're lucky, like Jeff Vinnick in Tampa, you know, Vinny Viola in Florida, go down the list. If you have good ownership and they then put pieces in place, then that's the key element to me. How's that?
That's a different answer than I think a lot of people would first offer, which is player. Eric, do you agree?
Yes, yeah, and in fact, when Scotty was running through all of the elements of Tampa, I would have added Al Murray, because Al Murray was the guy that found all those players in the later rounds, and you don't win that championship without hitting the home runs where you're supposed to. So you get Stamkos first overall, Vasilevsky's in the first round, but if you don't get Point where you get Point, if you don't get Kucherov where you get Kucherov, then none of that happens. And so it's the beauty of the National Hockey League right now, and really throughout time, is that there is no one size fits all formula for success. And Scotty, you referenced it. You know, Florida, they built their organization through trades and moving people in and out, and finding the right mix, which is ultimately what you're trying to do. Other organizations have gone scorched earth, built from the ground up. You know, Pittsburgh a couple of times. One time they built around Mario Lemieux, another time they built around Sidney Crosby, and they fit all of the pieces in there. It worked there. But if you look at the league today, you know, a number of teams, especially in the Atlantic Division, have tried that scorched earth approach, and they're in year three, five, six, eight sometimes of the rebuild, and they continue to spin their wheels, and they haven't gotten anywhere. So it works for some organizations and it doesn't work for others. And then the point that you at the very start of the conversation, you cited Washington. So there's a team that didn't look as if it had any blue chip draft capital coming in. Somehow, by hook or by crook, they're one of the best teams in the National Hockey League, with a, you know, a few smart decisions by the management group there to bring players in that just supplemented the group that they have there. So it's a puzzle. I mean, one of the reasons that we enjoy watching it is because at the start of the year, you have one idea, and halfway through the year, we have a new set of impressions that we formed. You know, on April 14th, 15th, or 16th, when the playoffs start, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I was thinking about this. I was going through some old hockey news. As I found a column I wrote in 1995. I think it was the year that New Jersey played Detroit in the final. It was the lockout
Short season.
shortened season.
It was a short season, yeah.
I picked the Stanley Cup winner correctly that year, and I haven't. I'm almost certain I haven't done it since then. So, of all of those years, so that's all, you know, 30 years, I
30
guess
years.
now. We're always asked to pick a championship team. You use all of the best available information that you can. And you know, because our publications used to make us pick it, and you pick a team. And if you go back, you know, you could have won a lot of money by not betting the team that I proposed, because I don't think I got one right. I got teams to the final, but I don't, you know, and I think that, you know, we're all pretty good analysts, but you know, the randomness of it when it gets to the playoffs is just it's crazy. And it's getting, you know, more random all the time. There was a period of time where you had to be in the top five or six teams, you know, to legitimately have a chance to win four rounds of the playoffs. So the team that would create an upset, you know, the 7-over-2 upset that we saw a lot of times in the when it was a 1-to-8 playoff thing, that seven team would be out in the second round. Well, no more. Now you get in, you got a chance. So And I guess my final point is that, you have all these fan bases that when things aren't going well, it's like burn it down. And it's like, that's the wrong answer. That is just flat out the wrong answer
By the
in my
way,
view.
I two things. If you're talking about management in Washington, you better give Ross Mahoney some credit, because Ross Mahoney's a lot of the brains, the same way Al Murray was in Tampa. And I'm glad you mentioned Al Murray, because Al Murray needs a pat on the back right now, because
That's true.
he's going through a bit of a tough time after the World Juniors.
Let's
Take a break. We'll come back with more 100% hockey with John Shannon, Scott Burnside, and Eric Tkachuk. Eric, are you going to frame that hockey news? And was it the
No.
hard copy? What
Yeah,
like?
I know. Well, what happened was I'm kind of recycling things now that I'm a retired human being. I find that I don't need as much of the paper that I used to save. But I have, oh, God, I could walk you down to my basement and show you file cabinets of stories that I wrote and stories that I saved. It's incredible to go back and dig into the archives like that, but I don't need them anymore. So the recycling bin is getting quite a workout these days.
I
Do
tell
you
you what, Eric,
remember
I used
when?
to I took every hockey game I produced, I would go up and squeeze out a free program out of somebody. So I had programs for 22, 2300 hockey games in my basement for a long period of time. And when you move 3 times in 3 years, it's not a good thing to hold those programs.
No. I'm
Amen.
curious, Scotty, Eric, when you read your stuff from a decade or 2 decades ago, do you remember it instantly? What you were thinking when you were writing it, or is there some disconnect? Scotty.
Yeah, no, I think you do. I think you're always brought back to a time in your life or something that you were doing, and I think I don't know whether Eric feels the same way. Invariably, you're like, oh, that worked all right, or oh, why did I do that? Or you might find a mistake. Oh, back in the days before the internet could correct everything, you find that stuff. But I think even I went back to I was doing some stuff for the Capitals recently and went back and found the stuff I'd written when Ovechkin was heading to 500. So you see that and you're reminded of I don't spend a lot of time doing it, but I do find that I don't know whether the process of writing is any different. I don't know if you found it, Eric, as you were heading to the end of your Hall of Fame career, did you do things differently? I found the same nervousness about, working on pieces and wondering if you hit the right note and did you do the job properly? And that's a fairly constant thing. And I don't know. It's a great question, Darren, because like Eric, you've written a few hundred words over the years, and it's I guess maybe the better thing, if somebody comes across something that you've written, and every once in a while you get a note. I saw this story, it's like somebody doing research for a museum or something, and they come
A
across something, say you've
museum,
written.
a
Yeah,
museum.
so anyway.
Well, you know what I would say to that, Scott? I think I was more consistent later in my career than earlier in my career. So again, I
What do you
just because
mean?
of it, because when I was really good, I was good, and when I was bad, I was awful. For example, a good friend of ours passed away this week, Al McNeil, long time. Well, when I started, he was the coach of the Calgary Flames, and I tried out for the Calgary Flames, right, in 80, 81. It was the era of participatory journalism. And two things. Well, John, you'll appreciate this. So I pulled two things out of the basement. One was the series that I wrote when I tried out for the Flames, and ultimately Al McNeil cut me. And God bless Al, what a kind man. So I've been there for training camp, the fitness testing, and on the ice. And at the end of the first day of on the ice, he came to me and said, "You're not getting in the way if you want to stick around for a couple of days." And I said, "No, I want to get out of here because I'm in over my head." And but you know, so I saw these pictures of them, and I reread the stories, and oh my God, they're terrible. Like they're just maudlin. I you know, like it's embarrassing to read these things. What was I thinking? You know, like it hardly rang true at all. And then, but the other thing, John, and this, I guess this is my point. So John was a big proponent of the first and really only sports cartoonist that I know, Dave Elston. So
Yes.
John used him for his Christmas cards, I remember, different times on Hockey Night in Canada. Well, the third ever Dave Elston cartoon that appeared in the Calgary Sun was a picture of was a cartoon of Al McNeil standing there with a clipboard looking at me, and I'm crashing through the boards, and all you can see are two skates, and the punchline is, "Geez, Eric, great speed. Now you just have to work on the stops." And the underline is, you know, Sun reporter tries out for the Flames. And so those two things brought to mind, you know, the great career of Al McNeil, but and how we're all going to miss him. But to your point, yeah, you know, when I was bad, I was really bad, and I think that I was able to eliminate the you know, more of the bad nights as my career went along.
You
So.
know, the only thing that's changed between broadcasting and print journalism is for the longest time, if you were bad on television, you never saw it. Now you see everything.
Yeah.
YouTube reminds you every day if you've made a mistake.
That's true.
Well, here, but also one other thing. So again, Bob McMillan, who was playing on that original Flames team, told me that as far as he was concerned, the difference between print and radio and television was, if you heard something negative about yourself on radio or television, you'd think, "Did I hear that right?" He says, but with the newspaper, you could go back and read it over and over again, and you knew that you were being criticized, and that's.
Well, that part hasn't changed.
Drama in Vancouver and the Rangers. Who has captured your attention more this year, Eric?
Wow. Well, you know, I'm going to be wishy-washy like Scott and say it's a tie. And there's a part of
That's
me
not
that would
good for
really.
anybody.
Well,
That
okay,
is
so here's
not
the
good for
thing.
a podcast,
I
Eric.
would love to see I would love to see these teams try to solve each other's problems. I guess that's where I'm going with this, because if JT Miller could end up in New York and Zibanejad could end up in Vancouver, you wonder, you know, as pieces of a larger trade, you wonder if that would help, because I think that the Rangers need a jolt, and I think that bringing JT Miller in would give them a jolt. Partly because of the strength of his personality. He's just, you know, he's so determined, and he just brings an aura to him. Not everybody likes what he brings, but I think that most people feel that that type of an attitude might get you over the hump in the playoffs. And I just think that in Vancouver, you need to lower the temperature, and perhaps bringing a guy like Zibanejad in, who presumably would have a better relationship with Pettersson, would simply just remove the issues that they have there. Because sometimes, you know, it's addition by subtraction. It's such a it's so important to have the right atmosphere in that dressing room, that willingness for teammates to play for each other. Like, you know, when we think about the surprise teams this year, you know, why is Calgary, you know, reasonably good when everyone thought they'd be terrible? It's because they're all playing for each other. You know, why is Los Angeles reasonably good? Because they're all playing for each other. So that's what you ultimately need to succeed in a team game. So I think you need to lower the temperature in Vancouver, and you need somebody that can come in there and maybe kick some ass in New York. And potentially there's a way that both these teams could solve each other's problems if that rumored exchange actually goes forward.
Yeah,
Scotty, can you offer the same with the salty language
don't be
as
as
well?
wishy-washy, okay?
No,
Oh no, I thought Eric saved it with the saltiness at the end.
I don't know how that trade happens because, of course, everyone involved has a no trade or no move, and it's
You get
interesting
around
to
those, Scotty.
it's
The
interesting.
Rangers can.
Yeah, the Rangers can. Well, it's interesting because the Rangers is completely, you know, the dynamic is different in New York because of the focal point I think in many ways is the GM Chris Drury, right? And how he's handled things and his approach to personnel. And it's not just the hockey players. You dig a little deeper and there's been some stuff that has gone on with the Rangers that has been a bit unsavory. And I think certainly when you think of Barclay Goodrow's departure and then Jacob Trouba's long-term, you know, long winding road to find him in Anaheim has, you know, I think, listen, I defended Chris Drury. It's his job to do whatever he thinks is best to make that team better. And they were a really good team, two wins away from going to a Stanley Cup final last year. Listen, do what you need to do. Everything else will come out in the wash. But there seems to have been a point now in New York where they have gone so far off the rails. And is it a result of how he has managed that team? And it seems like Peter Laviolette's not going anywhere. We know Rick Tocchet's not going anywhere in Vancouver. In Vancouver, it does really seem to be about your two best players, well, two of your three best players, and certainly two of your most expensive players that either can't get along, can't perform. You know, like, I don't know how you get to the end of that in terms of resolving it if you're not moving at least one of those pieces. And if you are, you're moving pieces when their value is at an absolute low. Now, we've seen in the past, you know, I think Marty St. Louis had to leave Tampa. And you know what? Tampa did okay. And there was only one team he was going to. And it seemed to work out okay at the end of the day. But those are rare situations. And, you know, Patrick Alvin and, you know, with counsel from Jim Rutherford, the Hall of Fame builder, that's a tough, tough spot. And may at some point, like, I just hate the idea that, well, you don't get along or you, well, I don't know what. And so we're going to ship one of you out to make it better. What's that say to the rest of the room? I don't know.
But you guys, I mean, between the two of you, you're almost like 80 years going into dressing rooms. You guys have seen it all. We all know that, you know, there, not every dressing room is lovey-dovey.
No.
And is too much, has there been too much made of all of this stuff and become a distraction for the team and for everybody involved? Is that a factor?
I think so for sure, John. And I'll let the guys chime in, but it's been a scapegoat in a lot of ways for Vancouver to put the blame on that relationship, Eric.
Yeah, no, you're right. And what I would say is that, you know, to John's point, that it happens a lot over the years in different dressing rooms, and they're able to keep it quiet, you know. And you work it out internally, and it's a lot easier to move a disaffected piece if it isn't in, you know, the headlines every day. So the fact that they've been fairly honest and transparent is really working against them. And those of us in this industry want honesty and transparency, but in terms of the greater good, which is, you know, trying to win a championship in Vancouver, it may end up costing them. And I do think that once you get past a certain point, you know, you can say all you want, you know, grow up, settle it yourself, work it out. You know, you don't have to, as Rick Tocchet says, go for dinner together. Just be professional. It's all well and good to say that. It's sometimes very hard for human beings to follow through on that. So I think the solution is, you know, finding a new home for one of the two. And I think that they've shown in Vancouver that they're capable of doing that. You know, yes, there are no trades. Yes, that's a lot of money for players that are underperforming. But at the end of the day, well, I always go back to, you know, like the picture person for that this year is Pierre-Luc Dubois. So now we're back to Washington. So when you think about untradeable contracts and players that had underperformed and were a distraction and had to be traded, last year's example, Exhibit A, was Pierre-Luc Dubois in Los Angeles. It didn't work out. It was clear publicly, privately, and that it wasn't working out. And how do you solve it? And they solved it by finding a home for him in Washington, where he's been quite good, getting a piece back, Darcy Kemper, that has been excellent and has solidified their goaltending, and both teams are better off for it. So if I'm one of those managers, I'm thinking to myself, there is a solution. Recent history has proven that Removing a distraction from the dressing room makes you better. They're not a better team in Los Angeles without Dubois. Dubois is better than anybody that they've got in their bottom six, but it wasn't a fit there. And if it's not a fit, you have to move on.
Funny, I thought you were going to talk about PLD in Winnipeg.
Well, two bad fits, but my point is the same. You move on, and ultimately you can find a solution, because that's an example of two teams that did find a solution.
Yeah.
Well, look, just before we leave that, I mean, are we not at a point in Vancouver where we're not having this conversation if Elias Pettersson is the elite player that he has shown flashes of, and that they assume he is and paid him as such, but he has not become that player? Like, when do you ever mention him when you're talking about the elite players in the NHL right now? When do you ever mention him in the same conversation as Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl, or, all the players we've talked about, Austin Matthews, go down the list? You never hear his name mentioned. And if you did, then even if he and JT Miller can't stand the sight of each other, does it matter? Well, it wouldn't matter. And maybe that's at the crux of this. And you have a player who has, and I go back to the playoffs last year, there's an opportunity for that team to beat the Edmonton Oilers in the second round. Where was that elite leadership in that series? And you're paying him at that level. And to me, this is, you can dance around all you want, he has not become the player they expect him to be and pay him to be. And if he never gets to that level, it won't matter who else is in that room. As far as I'm concerned, you're never going to get what you want in Vancouver.
Awesome stuff. Don't want to trump the listener, but I really do enjoy my time listening to Scott Burnside and Eric Dehatchek. This has been a thrill again. Two Elmer Ferguson Award winners.
Whoa. Hall of Famers.
Yes. Hall of Famers on 100% Hockey. Oh, welcome to the program, and can't wait to visit with you guys again.
Anytime.
Thank you very much.
I didn't intend that conversation that we started with Scott and Eric to turn into a who's better between Ovi and Sid. My point was that Ovechkin's pursuit of the all-time goal scoring record has just closed the gap, and it's nothing Sidney's done. And I've always enjoyed my conversations with Ovechkin, and I think he supported the game in marvelous fashion throughout his entire career.
I agree. Yeah, and I was one of those guys that was not necessarily an Ovi fan early on.
You weren't?
Not really. Because I like the guys, I think that so much for me changed when the Capitals won the Cup. Because I do believe this is the ultimate team sport. And so the measure of greatness is how you contribute to a championship team. That's a very subjective answer, but it's how I feel. That's why this is the greatest team sport. Our superstars, I've said this a million times, when Patrick Mahomes plays for the Kansas City Chiefs, he touches the ball 90 times. Touches the ball 90 times sometimes, even just taking the snap and handing it off or throwing it. A starting pitcher in baseball throws the ball 110 to 120 times. A basketball player can play 42 of 48 minutes. But in hockey, great players rarely play a third of the game. And so that's a real challenge for stardom and greatness in our game, other than the measure of winning championships. The one key thing that I think is really important with Ovechkin, though, right now is his career average of ice time is over 20 and a half minutes. So I think it's 20:42. And he's now, this year, is playing under 17:40. So he's playing 3 minutes less this year than ever before and been amazingly successful with it. So to take three minutes, and how, in Ovi's world, three minutes, what is that? Is that four or five shifts? That to me is really I think one of the keys to his success and the Caps' success, because he's now just one of the top six forwards, as opposed to everything being driven through eight on the one side of the ice. That to me is a huge factor in what's happened in Washington. The other thing is, and this is the old me, is this is so reminiscent, and don't laugh, of 1973 and 74, when everybody were following Henry Aaron and to beat Babe Ruth's record. And in the end, he didn't do it in the 73 season. We had to wait a whole offseason for him to do it. I think in the second game of the season, somebody will tweet me and say I'm full of it, but I think the second game of the season in Atlanta.
That's
for
my
the Braves.
Biggest fear with Ovi coming into this year.
It could happen. It could happen.
Like October 17th.
He could be at 893. When the season ends, 893, and then we have to wait all summer long for the record to be broken next year.
Now, would it be a bad thing for the league?
I don't know. I don't know. It would be better for it, but I mean, and by the way, you know, Wayne and Gary traveling for the last four or five goals is going to be fascinating to watch as well. And that to me is the best part about this, because Wayne is doing exactly what Gordy did for him.
Right.
At 802.
When do you think they start traveling?
I was told it was five goals before.
Five.
That's what I was told.
Cause you want to be there, but you also don't want to, like if he goes off for four.
That's why I think that five is a good number. But for some reason, I was told five. Maybe that was the guy at the Starbucks this morning that told me that. But I heard that somewhere. So
you go out for your Starbucks?
Some days.
What name do you use?
What name do I use?
Yeah,
Mickey.
I use Randy.
Randy.
I always use Randy. What's your name? Randy. And my daughter, we were there the other day. She's like, Who's Randy? I'm like, will you be quiet?
I have a story to tell about names and reservations and things like that one day when we have nothing else to talk about.
Do you use a secret name in the hotel?
What are you talking about?
Like Fred Flintstone?
No. What I do is more than anything else is I just use the word Jay.
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 Jay. Got an? Should we put in? Should we put a name on that cup? I used to say no, right? I used to say no. Put a name on the cup? No, I don't want a name on the cup. But then my daughter worked at Starbucks, and I felt bad, and I thought I should be nice. And then I said, no, don't put a name. Just put a J on it. Oh, and so they put a J.
J. He's fancy. Yeah. Not Sir Jonathan.
No, Sir Jonathan of Port Credit. I've heard that before.
Sir Jonathan of Port Credit. Thanks to Hugh McLarty for making us happen on 100% Hockey. We'll be back next week with John Shannon and Darren Millard.